159 Ivy Street, Chapter 13. The blame is on me morning did not arrive with drama. It slipped in like a thief who had no intention of stealing, only observing. Braddon noticed it first as a softening. The fluorescent lights that had ruled the night suddenly felt cruel, overexposed, embarrassed by the pale blue that crept through the narrow hospital windows. The long night had been loud with machines, footsteps, and guilt. Morning brought no answers, only breath. He had not slept. He had hovered instead, between chairs, between prayers, between versions of himself. The man who arrived with Lisa in an ambulance. The boy who once knelt in starched white robes as an altar boy, believing absolution could be spoken aloud and granted instantly. The man he was now, learning that forgiveness required endurance. The sunrise found him leaning against a window at the end of the corridor. Outside, Toronto stirred reluctantly. Snow clung to sidewalks like a memory refusing to let go. Delivery truck idled. A nurse sipped coffee, her reflection briefly overlapping his in the glass. Life, inexplicably, was continuing. How dare it, he thought. Then, just as suddenly, thank God. The night had taken everything it could from him. Morning was not there to return it. Only to say, you're still here. Decide what that means. He checked his phone again, even though he knew there would be no updates yet. No new messages from Josephine. She would still be asleep, her faith doing the work distance could not. He pictured her as he always did in moments like this, curled inward, holding herself, loving him without knowing how badly he needed it. The guilt still lived in his chest, but it had changed shape. It was no longer a wild animal tearing through him. It had become a weight, dense, deliberate, something to carry, not escape. A nurse approached quietly, her shoes whispering against the floor. Mr. Beckett? He turned too fast, heart racing ahead of reason. She's still in surgery, she said gently, anticipating the question. But her vitals are stable. The next hour will tell us more. Not saved. Not lost. Braddon nodded, absorbing the word like a prayer spoken in a language he barely remembered. When the nurse left, he returned to the window. The sun had climbed higher now, catching on the edges of buildings, turning glass into fire. He thought of Lisa's letter, the way she had loved him without restraint, without strategy. He thought of Josephine's message, love offered not as demand, but as shelter, two loves, two truths. Neither was erased by the other. For the first time all night, Braddon did not ask God for anything. Instead, he listened. To the hum of the building waking up, to the distant murmur of morning traffic, to his own breath, steady now, anchored. He realized then that the night had not been punishment. It had been a reckoning. Morning was not forgiveness. It was permission. Permission to stay. To tell the truth when Lisa woke. To love Josephine without hiding. To carry guilt without letting it define him. Braddon, carrying the weight of the world, has failed to save the ones he loves. Michelle assured that he was not the cause nor to be blamed for Lisa's predicament, though the unspoken words had sharp teeth gnawing inside. A text buzzed softly in his hand. From Michelle, hi Brad, got a minute. I would like to continue our conversation. Braddon closed his eyes as the sun warmed the side of his face. He didn't smile. Hi Michelle, did you sleep? Of course, give me 5 minutes, I will call you. Braddon stood up straighter. The long night had broken, not cleanly, not kindly, but enough. And sometimes enough is everything. Telling Michelle the facts felt different from telling her the truth. Facts could be listed. Truth required skin. Hey, good morning. Michelle, if it's okay with you, let me talk. Braddon sounded tired. I'm in no shape to have a two-way conversation right now. That would require logical thinking, a skill I currently don't possess. I hope you understand. Braddon closed his eyes to focus. The words were there crowded, clawing, but his mouth refused them. Michelle, he said finally, his voice thinner now, worn down to the bone. I need to tell you what really happened, and I don't know how to do that without hatting myself while I say it. She didn't rush him. That alone felt like mercy. We were at Phil's pub, Braddon began. Same place we'd gone 100 times over the years, corner table by the window. Lisa ordered the same drink she always does, gin, no lime, because she hates pretense. A weak, broken smile flickered and died. She was wearing that red coat you love, the one that makes her impossible to miss. He swallowed. It was supposed to be a goodbye dinner, not dramatic, not romantic, just us. Closure, maybe. Or pretending at it, breathed softly on the other end, listening. Phone rang, Braddon continued. Josephine, I stepped away to answer it. I told Lisa I'd be right back. She nodded, didn't smile. I should have known then. He rubbed his face with his free hand as if trying to erase the image. While I was away, Emily came to the table. She's Lisa's replacement. She happened to be there. Stiffened. Braddon felt it even through the line. She didn't wait to be invited, he said. She just sat down at Lisa's table, our table. I didn't know that part until later. Emily told Lisa very plainly that she had feelings for me from the first time they met at the office party. The silence stretched, heavy and sharp. And Lisa, Braden whispered, had already spent the evening watching me step away from her to take a call from the woman I love. Exhaled slowly. Oh, God. I wasn't there to stop it, Braden said. To soften it, to explain, Lisa heard it raw, unfiltered. All of it landed at once. Jealousy, humiliation, grief, and rage. I've never seen her angry like that. Emily said Lisa stood up so fast her chair fell over. Voice cracked, then steadied, as if something in him had gone numb. When I came back in, Lisa was already walking toward the door. I called her name. She turned to me. Lisa said you loved me and I was an idiot. Braden's throat tightened. She stormed out onto the street. It was dark, wet. Rainy night traffic, people driving too fast, too careless. I didn't follow. I should have, Michelle. His breathing grew uneven. She stepped off the curb without looking. She wasn't thinking. She was hurt and furious and shattered. A car swerved too closely, too fast. The sound, he stopped, pressed his lips together. I'll never forget the sound. His voice broke. You saw it. No, I heard the tires squealed. I heard the crowd. I heard Emily crying hysterically, Braden said. When I ran outside, I saw her red coat on the asphalt. I heard myself screaming her name like it might pull her back into her body. His hand trembled around the phone. The driver stopped. People gathered. Emily was there, crying, apologizing, feeling the guilt. The ambulance came. And I kept thinking if I hadn't taken that call, if I'd stayed at the table, if I'd just told Lisa the truth sooner, she would still be sitting across from me, rolling her eyes at my bad jokes. His voice collapsed inward. I wasn't the car, he said, but I was the spark. Spoke gently now, firmly. No, you were part of the story, Braden, not the weapon. But I left her alone, he said. At the worst possible moment, I left her. You didn't abandon her, Michelle replied. You didn't push her into the street. But I didn't protect her either, Braden said. And I was supposed to, in some way, in all the ways that matter. The words spilled now, unstoppable. I should have loved her clearly or let her go cleanly. Instead, I kept her close enough to hope and far enough to ache. That's on me. Michelle was crying openly now. He could hear it. My sister loved you, she said, but she chose to walk out that door. I know, Braden whispered, and I will carry that knowledge for the rest of my life. Was a long pause. Then Michelle said, Braden, listen to me. Lisa's heart has always been her own, fierce, stubborn, beautiful. She doesn't belong to your guilt. Leaned back, staring at the ceiling lights, blurred by tears. I would trade places with her without hesitation, he said. I would take every broken bone if it meant she could wake up whole. I know, Michelle said softly. That's why she trusted you. Clock on the wall ticked louder now. 8 a.m. crept closer. Surgery dragged on. I'm getting on a flight in 2 days, Michelle said. I'll be there early evening. Braden let out a shaky breath he didn't realize he'd been holding. Thank God, I don't think I can do this alone anymore. You don't have to, she said. Just stay with her, be there when she wakes up. I will, Braden promised. I swear. Braden, Michelle added. Yes, when she opens her eyes, tell her the truth, all of it. Love doesn't survive silence. He closed his eyes. I won't hide anymore, he said. From her or from myself. A long silence followed. Braden sat alone while Michelle remained on the call. He felt lighter by a fraction, like someone who had finally laid a body down after carrying it too far. Lisa was still in surgery. Josephine was still asleep somewhere far away. Dawn was approaching whether he was ready or not. And Braden, stripped of excuses, sat with his guilt, not to punish himself, but to finally tell the truth when it mattered most. Before Braden could say goodbye to Michelle, the heavy double doors marked Do Not Enter OPERATING room swung open with a soft hydraulic. A young-looking Asian doctor stepped out, already peeling off his surgical mask. His hair was still perfectly in place, his eyes alert, almost unfairly so for someone who had just finished a 5-hour surgery. The doctor said warmly, My name is Dr. Carson Kwok. Are you Mr. Beckett? Yes, Braden answered too quickly. I'm Braden Beckett. How is Lisa, doctor? Kwok studied him for half a second, the hollow eyes, the rigid posture, the barely contained tremor in his hands. Mr. Beckett, doctor, please, Braden interrupted gently. Call me Braden. A faint smile flickered across the doctor's face. All right, Braden, your wife is doing better now. I'm sorry, Braden cut in again, wincing. Lisa isn't my wife, she's a special friend. Kwok nodded easily without embarrassment. Understood. Braden, is there someone else I should be talking to, like a family member? Doc, for now, I am at Lisa's sister, oh my God. From the phone in Braden's hand came a sudden, sharp voice. Hello, hello, Braden, are you still there? Michelle was yelling into the phone to get Braden's attention. Braden just realized that Michelle was still on the cell phone. Michelle, are you there? Yes, thank God, Michelle replied. I'm still here, what's happening? The surgeon's here, Braden said. I'm putting you on speaker. He turned to the doctor. Dr. Kwok, Lisa's sister, is on the phone. You can speak to both of us. Kwok nodded and shifted his stance slightly, as though squaring himself for something that mattered. Hello, Michelle. You're Lisa's sister. Yes, Michelle said. I'm calling from California. I'll be in Toronto in 2 days. That's good to hear, the doctor replied. Before I continue, I need your permission to discuss medical details. Mr. Beckett isn't technically family, was no hesitation. Braden is more family than anyone else, Michelle said firmly. Especially to my sister, please say whatever you need to say with him there. Kwok gave a small, respectful nod. All right then, Braden. You look exhausted. Please sit down. Braden lowered himself onto one of the green leather couches in the waiting area. The seat was cold, almost shockingly so, and for a brief second it snapped him back into his body. Awake, present. Lisa arrived with a leg fracture from the impact, the doctor continued. Fortunately, it was minor. However, she collapsed in the emergency shortly afterward, as you may remember. Yes, Braden said quietly. I remember, he swallowed. She was joking. Even then, the memory cracked him open. The idea that those words, the joke, the almost smile, could have been final pressed hard against his chest. That cannot be how this ends, he thought. Not after the letter, not without a punchline. Braden, Dr. Kwok said gently, are you okay? Doctor, is Braden okay? Michelle asked, panic threading her voice. Okay, Braden said quickly. Just a moment, please go on. Kwok folded his hands loosely in front of him, his tone shifting into careful precision. Lisa sustained a traumatic brain injury, what we call a TBI. She likely hit her head when she fell after the impact. Although she arrived conscious and responsive, her brain began to swell, a condition known as cerebral edema. Braden nodded, though his stomach tightened. To control the swelling, the doctor continued, we placed her into an induced coma and performed a decompressive hemicrynectomy. Michelle inhaled sharply. Without getting into surgical specifics, Dr. Kwok added gently, the procedure went very well. Her vitals post-surgery are strong, stable, encouraging. The next 20 to 30 hours will be critical, but at this point we're cautiously optimistic. Followed, not the heavy kind. The kind that arrives with relief so sudden it almost hurts. Both Michelle and Braden, in their way, had a word of thanks to God without a religious context. Braden spoke first. Doctor, when will she wake up? Is there a chance of memory loss, damage? He hated himself for asking. Needed the answer anyway, Dr. Kwok glanced at the phone. Michelle, do you have any questions? She paused, thought. Then softly, no. Braden asked what I'm afraid to ask. Kwok nodded. All right, he said. This is where I give what I jokingly call the good news, bad news speech, though I hate that phrase. A faint smile flickered. Human, kind. The good news is the surgery did exactly what it was supposed to do. The swelling is controlled. The bad news is that brains don't follow schedules. We don't know yet how Lisa will respond. Some patients wake in days, some take weeks. I can and won't guess beyond that. He paused, letting the honesty land. This may not be the answer you want. But it's the truest one I can give you right now. Closed her eyes, silently urging time forward. Her flight in 2 days was at 10:01 p.m. Toronto time. Braden couldn't speak, but he understood. He was beyond exhausted. He couldn't utter a single word in response to the doctor, but it all made sense. That was the frustration of feeling utterly helpless to the one he loves, not as a lover, but as a special love that endures time. Thank you, Dr. Kwok, she said. When I get to Toronto, I hope we can talk again then. Like that, the doctor replied, then turning to Braden, his voice softened further. Professional advice, both of you need rest. Especially you, Mr. Beckett. I can arrange a hospital bed, but I'd prefer you go home. Shower, sleep, that's a medical order. Smiled faintly through the phone. I agree with the doctor, please, I need you sharp. Okay, you're right. I will go home to change, take a shower, then come back. What Braden meant was that he would be able to talk to Josephine quietly, because it would be a very long conversation. He glanced at the clock. If he could stay awake just a little longer, he could call Josephine by 10, and there would be no more running. The drive home wasn't long, but it stretched itself thin, like time diluted with exhaustion. Traffic lights lingered in their red. The streets looked unfamiliar, as if the city had quietly rearranged itself while he was gone. Leaving Lisa at the hospital felt wrong. Not calling Josephine for 10 hours felt worse. Every part of him resisted the stillness ahead. Hospitals at least hummed with purpose. Monitors, footsteps, clipped voices. Home would be silent, judgmentally so. He rehearsed the call in his head as he drove. Started sentences. Abandoned them. Josephine, I love you. The words floated up again and again, small and perfect and utterly insufficient. The house greeted him with darkness, not as the color of day, but the feeling inside. Complete, unapologetic darkness at 9:30 a.m. Of course it did. No one had crossed its threshold in over 24 hours. The air felt stale, untouched, like it had been waiting for him to return and admit something. Dave, his neighbor, took Bailey so he wasn't alone in the dark and without food or water. "Man, I need a shower," he muttered aloud, his voice foreign in the quiet, "and strong coffee. I can't remember the last time I slept. Absolute insanity." Braddon peeled off his clothes as he walked, dropping them where they fell. Shoes by the door, shirt near the hallway, jeans abandoned at the foot of the bed like evidence. He didn't care. Order could wait. The shower roared to life, steam blooming instantly. "Oh God," he breathed as the water hit him. "This is amazing." It felt like he hadn't showered in a week. His shoulders sagged under the heat. Muscles loosened reluctantly as if they didn't trust relief yet. "I'm so tired," he thought. "But I have to call Josephine when I'm done." He reached for the shampoo, then stopped. Reality arrived without warning. Tears surfaced suddenly, quietly, indistinguishable from the water streaming down his face. He didn't try to stop them. Both arms rose. Palms pressing flat against the tile wall. The surface was cool beneath the heat, solid enough to hold him when he couldn't hold himself. His breath fractured. Images came uninvited. Lisa smiling through pain, joking in emergency, Josephine's voice from the night before, steady and near even when everything else was falling apart. His knees gave. Braddon slid down the wall until he was sitting on the shower floor, back curved, head bowed. The water continued to fall, relentless and forgiving, washing over his hair, his shoulders, his grief. For 10 minutes, pain felt like an hour. He let it take everything it could. The blame, the fear, the unbearable knowledge that love, once fractured, never returns to its original shape. The ringing came suddenly. Sharp. Insistent. Braddon startled awake, gasping. For a moment, he didn't understand why he was wet, why the floor was cold against his skin. Then the tiles came back into focus. The water was still running. "Oh, shit!" He scrambled upright, shut off the water, grabbed 2 towels, and stumbled out of the bathroom, heart racing. The ringing continued. "Where the fuck is my phone?" he muttered, panic rising. He scanned the dresser, the bed. Nothing. Then he saw the pants crumpled near the bedroom door. Found it. He yanked the phone from the back pocket, water dripping from his hair onto the screen, breath still uneven. "Hello?" There was silence from the other end. A faint whimpering could be heard. "Brad." Josephine's voice came through, thick with sleep and worry braided together. There was a pause. He could hear her breathing steady itself, the way she always did when preparing for impact. "Are you okay?" she asked. "Is Lisa?" "She's okay. She came out of surgery," Braddon said. "Stable, that's all we know right now." "God," Josephine whispered. Then more quietly, "and you?" Braddon leaned his forehead against the wall. "I'm not," he said. "But I will be, and I need to tell you everything now, not later." "Not filtered. If you want to hang up at any point, I'll understand." Her silence sharpened. "Okay," she said. "I'm here." Took a breath deep enough to hurt. "When Lisa was hit," he began, "I was on the phone with you." Josephine didn't interrupt. That alone felt like love. "I stepped away from the table to take your call," he continued. "While I was outside, Emily sat down with Lisa, uninvited. She told Lisa she had feelings for me. At the same time, Lisa could see me talking to the woman I love." A soft intake of breath from Josephine. "Lisa got angry," Braddon said. "Not petty angry, devastated angry. She stormed out towards me by the bar. She said something, then I said something." Braddon took a deep breath. "She ran into the street. A car hit her." The words landed. "Oh my God," Josephine said. Not an accusation, shock, pain. "I need you to hear this part clearly," Braddon said. "I didn't cause the accident. But I was part of the chain, and I own that. There it was, no hedging, no self-defense. I should have been honest with Lisa long ago," he went on. "I should have drawn boundaries instead of living in the middle. I let her love me without giving her clarity, and that's not kindness, it's fear." Josephine was quiet for a long moment. "Thank you for telling me," she said finally. "I haven't finished," Braddon replied. His voice wavered. I read Lisa's letter last night. She loved me deeply. And I failed her, not by choosing you, but by not choosing truth sooner. Josephine exhaled slowly. When she spoke, her voice was steady, but it carried weight. Do you still love me? Yes, Braddon said immediately, no hesitation. Completely, and I won't lie to you ever again, even if the truth costs me. Pause longer this time. I was afraid, Josephine admitted. Afraid that what we had was beautiful because it wasn't tested by reality. Afraid that once real life arrived, I would disappear. You didn't, Braddon said. You anchored me last night when everything fell apart. You were the only constant in my heart. I felt you, she said quietly. Even when you weren't answering. Braddon closed his eyes. There's something else, he said. Michelle, Lisa's sister, she is arriving tonight. I've told her everything. I won't hide anymore from anyone. Glad, Josephine replied. Love can survive truth. It can't survive shadows. He smiled faintly. That was her, always numbing things cleanly. Jose, he said, voice breaking now. If you decide this is too much, I will understand. I won't chase you. I won't bargain. She answered without urgency, without drama. I'm not leaving, she said. But I won't pretend this doesn't hurt. We will walk through this honestly or not at all. Relief flooded him, not the light kind, the earned kind. I choose you, Braddon said. But I choose truth first, even when it's ugly, Braddon concluded. That's the only way I would accept being chosen, Josephine replied. They stayed on the line, not speaking much, just breathing together across distance. Two people standing in the aftermath, refusing to turn away. I love you, Braddon said finally. I know, Josephine answered. And I'm still here. The call ended gently. Braddon stepped back into the hallway, where morning had fully claimed the space. Life continued, not cruelly now, but insistently. He wasn't healed, but he was honest. And for the first time since the night began, that felt like solid ground. Josephine sat at the small kitchen table long after the call ended, her phone face down as if it might still be warm from his voice. The apartment was silent in the way only early morning can be, not peaceful exactly, but suspended, as though the world itself was holding its breath. She did not cry right away. She never did. Tears were something that arrived late, after thought had finished its work. Outside, the city was waking without ceremony. A delivery truck hissed to a stop. Someone laughed on the sidewalk below, life moving forward unbothered by the night that had nearly broken her open. She wrapped both hands around her mug, though the coffee had gone cold from an hour ago. She hadn't noticed when. That felt right somehow. Everything important had cooled overnight. Anger, panic, the sharp edge of jealousy. What remained was weight and clarity. Braddon had told her the truth. Not the curated kind. Not the version shaped to protect himself or preserve her affection. He had told it raw, unfinished, without asking to be forgiven. That mattered more than he knew. Still, knowing didn't mean not hurting. She closed her eyes and saw it too clearly. Him standing outside the restaurant, phone pressed to his ear, shoulders slightly hunched the way they always were when he was trying to be careful with someone's heart. Her heart, she realized, even then. Inside, another woman had spoken his name with longing. Another woman had heard confirmation of what she feared. Josephine didn't need imagination to supply the rest. She knew what jealousy could do when it arrived uninvited and absolute. The accident wasn't his fault. But pain was rarely interested in fairness. She pressed her fingers into her palm, grounding herself. She had learned that trick years ago, stay in the body when the mind begins to spiral. She breathed in slowly, counted, released. Again. Love can survive truth, she had said. She meant it. But love surviving did not mean love staying unchanged. What unsettled her most was not Emily or Lisa or even the accident. It was the mirror Braddon had held up without meaning to. She had been afraid of being a beautiful pause in his life instead of a destination, afraid of being chosen in theory but abandoned in practice, afraid that if she asked too much, she would be easy to leave. So she had stayed careful, poised, slightly back. And in that space, others had stepped forward. Josephine rose from the table and moved to the window. Morning light spilled across the floor in a pale stripe, catching dust she hadn't bothered to notice before. Nothing was pristine. Everything was alive. She thought of Lisa, broken, unconscious, caught in a moment that could not be undone. Compassion welled in her chest, surprising and fierce. There was no victory in another woman's suffering, no triumph in being loved when someone else lay bleeding for it. She whispered Lisa's name, a quiet offering. No prayer formed, just acknowledgement. Braddon had chosen truth. That choice carried consequences, for him, for her, for all of them. She would not punish him for his honesty, but she would not rush past her own reckoning either. Josephine picked up her phone again, scrolling to his name. She didn't call, not yet. She needed to stand on her own feet first, feel the shape of the ground beneath her. She understood now. Love wasn't about being the only woman in the story. It was about being the one who stayed when the story turned difficult, without disappearing herself in the process. When she finally sat back down, the light had shifted. The day was officially underway. Josephine took another breath, steady and unafraid. She was still here, but she would be here honestly or not at all. And when she spoke to Braddon again, it would not be from fear of losing him, but from the quiet strength of knowing she had not lost herself. Braddon's phone beeped as a call appeared on the screen. St. Michael's Hospital marked urgent. What the hell, a call from the hospital? Braddon pressed the answer button. Hi, is this Braddon Beckett? The hospital operator spoke in a monotone voice. Yes, is there a problem? His voice was already braced for impact. Mister, Beckett, this is St. Michael's Hospital. I have Dr. Kwok on the line. He needs to speak with you immediately. Please hold. Braddon blinked. Seriously, please hold. The line clicked. Braddon, came the familiar voice, calm but altered. This is Dr. Kwok. Can we talk? Doc, Braddon said, forcing a thin breath through his nose. I wouldn't say I like the tone of this call. What's going on? Silence. Not static. Not a dropped signal. A deliberate pause. In that pause, Braddon's body understood what his mind refused to accept. His hand tightened around the phone. His legs weakened as if the floor had quietly decided it would no longer support him. Braddon, Dr. Kwok said finally, his voice lower now, weighted. I am so sorry. Room tilted. Lisa went into cardiac arrest 12 minutes ago, the doctor continued. Despite immediate resuscitation efforts, we lost her. The phone slipped from Braddon's hand. It hit the floor once, a dull sound, unimportant and final. Braddon whispered to no one. No, this can't be happening. The dizziness came fast and absolute. His knees buckled. His back struck the wall as he slid down, his body folding inward as though trying to protect something that had already been taken. Lisa is gone. Thought never finished forming. The world went white, then dark. Braddon collapsed fully onto the floor, limbs slack, breath shallow, consciousness gone. His body lay silent. But somewhere beneath it, deeper, quieter, his subconscious screamed for him, voiceless, endless, saying the words his lips never had time to speak. Braddon, Dr. Kwok said into the phone. Mr. Beckett, are you with me? There was no answer. At first, Kwok thought the line had dropped. He listened closely. No click, no dial tone. Just the faint, open hum of a live call. Then he heard it, a soft, dull sound, not a voice, not breath, a body meeting the floor. Braddon, Kwok said again, louder now, controlled but urgent. Braddon, can you hear me? Nothing. Dr. Kwok's jaw tightened. This was no longer about delivering news. This was a medical situation unfolding in real time when he could not see. He motioned to the nurse beside him without covering the receiver. Call emergency services, now. We have an unresponsive male, mid-30s, who collapsed at home. Open line. Back into the phone, steady as a lifeline. Braddon, if you can hear me, stay with me. Help is coming. You're not alone. The line stayed open. Dr. Kwok remained on it, listening to the quiet aftermath, the fragile space knowing that sometimes the only medicine for grief was presence. And sometimes, even that arrived too late. Braddon Beckett lay unconscious, shattered by a sentence that had ended a life and broken his. The doctor, with phone in hand, and with Braddon's, was lying a foot away from his, on the floor. In Braddon's mind, even when he was no longer conscious, his response to Lisa's letter was the last thing he wanted to say. Lisa, I read your letter but have yet to respond, and I'm so sorry for that. I have been busy, as you know, but I owe you the courtesy to at least try. This is my way of showing you that I am trying. When you have been to heaven, you start worrying about hell. It is not because of the destination. It's because you are not there in hell. I can't imagine the people I love, such as you, could end up there. It's simply impossible. I have not been living like a saint, that's for sure, but it doesn't warrant having the devil as my roommate for eternity. My dearest Lisa,